Hello and welcome to Healthcare on the Rocks, Employee Benefits with a Twist. I'm Mike Pattingale, Senior Account Executive for Channel Sales.
And I'm Jennifer Jones, Population Health Practice Leader at Springbuck. In this podcast, we'll talk with employers, benefit advisors, technology innovators, and other experts in wellness, human resources, and healthcare. Our guest today is Jason Norby, who's a Senior Account Executive and Partner at M3 Insurance. Jason specializes in employee benefits, coordinating ongoing service for clients to ensure that their coverage meets their needs. And he consults with and advises clients about the design, implementation, and management of their benefit programs.
Jason is also M3's Director of Employee Benefits Captive Practice. In this role, he serves as the subject matter expert, strategist, and thought leader on health captives agency-wide. He is responsible for sharing information on trends and issues that specifically impact his practice. Welcome to the show, Jason.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Absolutely. As I mentioned, our podcast name is Healthcare on the Rocks, Employee Benefits with a Twist. What's the biggest twist you've seen in employee benefits during your career, Jason?
Yeah, great question, Mike.
Thanks.
I guess you're probably not going to be surprised by my answer. As someone who's been in the space for 27 years, I spent the first 15 years of my career living in a world where employee benefits captives didn't really exist. And so what I saw and what I witnessed was a healthcare system that was broken and also a health insurance system where employers were reasonably expecting to see double-digit increases year over year. When I was introduced to captives, that was probably the biggest twist that I saw in my career because I, for the first time, saw an opportunity for employer groups who wanted to be forward-thinking and data-driven, be given an opportunity where they could use their forward-thinking tools to be pooled together with other like forward-thinking groups, and together they could reduce healthcare trend and thus create stability for them as purchasers of health insurance.
Yeah, I think we could probably all agree that healthcare is still a little bit broken. Maybe some still opportunities there to improve. But Jason, so for some of our users or listeners who may be unfamiliar with captives, can you give us like a broad overview as far as what they are and how they really benefit employers that you're working with?
Yeah, you know, again, benefit captives have only been around for, let's call it just over a decade now. And I think they really took off with the inception of Obamacare because the groups that were already feeling the pain of being, for lack of a better word, stuck in the fully insured world saw some additional pain points that came along with Obamacare. And so groups really started to explore ways and means for which they could get out of that environment and start to create value for the things that they were doing, particularly in a self-funded environment. Essentially what a captive allows an employer group to do is to move into a self-funded environment, but to do so with the power of many other like-thinking employers versus going it alone. And in so doing, going into this self-funded environment, they essentially exit what I would call a dirty risk pool and enter into what would be a much cleaner known pool of only other groups who are doing the same proactive things to both manage and mitigate risk. And quite honestly, in all the years I've been doing this, I've never had a group who's left the captive because essentially it gives these employers the opportunity to be self-funded and thus take advantage of their good risk, to share that risk with only other like-thinking employer groups, and to be able to now have access to all of their data from which to be strategic. The thing that I always find funny about health insurance and people complaining about the cost and the way health insurance works is that many people complain about it, but then ultimately decide not to do anything about it. Whereas, you know, everything else they do from a business standpoint is based on data, it's strategic, it's long-term. And quite frankly, health insurance is typically the second largest spend for an employer behind paying people salaries. And so why wouldn't you want to be the same way on that spend? Strategic, data-driven, long-term thinking, et cetera.
And when you say like-minded employers, obviously you mentioned kind of around their efforts to try to control cost around healthcare. Do you see where like individuals that enter the same or enter one captive together, are there other similarities as far as size or industry, other types of makeup, or do you tend to have a broad spectrum of employers that join those groups?
Yeah, it really is a broad spectrum. I mean, the first and foremost, not everybody can get into a captive, and not all captives are also created equal. The captives that we've tried to develop and put our clients with are typically going into a captive that not only has a financial model that works for them, but also has very specific risk management strategies that every member of the captive has to employ. And thus, if everybody in that pool is doing the same proactive things to mitigate risk, everybody wins. Whereas in a traditional environment where you're in a pool where you don't know anyone else, you could be doing all the proactive things in the world, but all you're really doing is making more money for the insurance company versus creating a cleaner pool for everyone.
And the biggest question, can you be voted off the island if you don't, do your part to maintain your own risk?
Yeah, that's the question that we get often. I have never seen someone get voted off the island, quote unquote. Ultimately, though, what I do see is the groups that join the captive, they get to know each other. They share best practices with each other. They share data with each other and ideas. And frankly, groups are going to take turns having bad years in a captive. Not everybody's going to perform well every year. But ultimately, as long as everybody is doing those things that they agreed to do on the front end from a risk management perspective, they're not going to get kicked off the island. I have heard of groups getting kicked out of a captive because they've performed poorly and they've decided, hey, I said I was going to do this when I joined the captive and I've done none of it. That's where, and it's not Jason Nordby or even the captive manager that's going to kick him out. It's the other members of the captive who are going to be looking at them saying, hey, we're all doing these things. You said you were going to do these things and you're doing none of them. Maybe the captive wasn't for you.
Yeah. One thing I love about working with M3 is that you all work with more than one captive, which I think is very unique. Curious, how many captives overall would you say that you work with? And why would you say that's important for the employers that you all serve?
Yeah, that's a great question, Mike. We do work with a handful of captive managers, and there are different cells within those captive managers for which we place business. Some are heterogeneous, some are homogeneous, industry specific. I think the biggest thing for us is that at the end of the day, we're trying to find the best solution for the employer, and some of the requirements and some of the cells aren't going to be an appropriate fit for one group, but they are for another. And so ultimately, what we try to do is we try to educate our groups on, first and foremost, what is a captive? And then ultimately, if it's something that they want to partake in, then it's finding the right fit for them. What are the things that they can do and can't do? And what are the things that they want to be a part of? Some groups go into it only wanting to be with other employers just like them, a homogenous captive. Others, they're not as concerned with being in the same industry. They just want to be with a cleaner risk pool that are doing certain things on a wellness perspective or a data management perspective. So I think it really gives us the freedom to do our job, which is ultimately find the best solution for that individual employer.
Yeah. And for our listeners that, again, might not be as familiar with captives, what would you say makes a group a good fit? As you're kind of pursuing those different resources?
Yeah, another good question. One of the things that I've found over the years, and maybe it's just me, but I don't think it is, as often as I hear groups over, a quarter of a century complain about health insurance and health insurance costs, at the end of the day, if they get a 0% renewal from their insurance company, they're oftentimes apt not to do anything because it's easier, right? And the groups that get the 25% increase, then they're scrambling, looking for the silver bullet. The truth is, the groups that are running low single digits to flat, the ones that are performing well, have a good risk pool, those are the best fits for the captive. If you're a group that has a significant amount of bad risk going on within the plan, I don't want to say you wouldn't qualify to be in the captive per se, but you're certainly going to be underwritten appropriately. And the other members of the captive aren't necessarily going to want to take on your bad risk. So what we often find ourselves doing is we find a group that is interested in the captive, is willing to do the things that they need to do to be a part of the captive. And then we try to get them captive ready by managing those claims, identifying what the issues are, and putting in the appropriate strategies so that down the road they can actually get into the captive.
Yeah. And I think on our end, we typically see it, you know, probably in the 50 to 250 enrolled employees space as far as size wise. Is that consistent with what you all see on your end?
Yeah, that's absolutely, I would say the 50 to 500 is definitely like the what I would call the sweet spot. Those are typically the groups that have entered into the captive. But I have groups under 50 employees in captives, and I have groups over 1,000 employees in captives. So it also depends on what the group is looking to accomplish.
Yeah, and I know you've been telling me about how great my questions are. I don't want to intimidate Jen here. I wanted to give you a chance to jump in as well.
Obviously, at Springbok, we are heavily focused on data. So can you speak to us a little bit about how data analytics powers your strategies around captives and how that is helpful for them as far as, you know, reducing their risk or making that a consistent message of what they're trying to achieve from a cost reduction standpoint?
Yeah, it's, you know, this, first of all, Jen, sensational question.
Oh, just thank make sure you so much. Don't want to insult Mike too much, but
I think one of the big issues, so first and foremost, I would say when I started in the space, let's call it a dozen years ago, the groups that were most commonly going into the captive space were those who were, as I said earlier, stuck in the fully insured world. And groups in that fully insured world don't get a lot of detail on what's really driving their costs. They might get some information about a large claimant or two, but they don't really have the ability to break it down by category and strategically design, plan things to mitigate that risk. So moving into the self-funded environment is one thing, but then moving into a captive that employs, as an example, Springbok, where you can really get into not just data and analytics, but what I would call or consider population health management, and to be able to deploy strategies specific to that, not only for yourself, but for the group as a whole. And if everybody in that group is employing those same strategies, you can imagine how you can really get at the heart of what is driving the costs, what are the risk factors, and proactively mitigating those. Because one of the things that I see as a broken component of the healthcare system today, or the health insurance system, is, and as a broker, I've lived this, you know, I come to a renewal for you, Jen, and I say, Jen, here's your 15% renewal, and the reason you got a 15% is because this person had cancer and this person had a heart attack. And that's good information to know, but at the end of the day, those are the things that have already happened. And so the thing that I love about working with Springbok and the data and analytical tools that we have within the captive space is we have the data and analytics to try to proactively identify not those risks that have happened in the past, but are potentially going to happen in the future, and then proactively curb them from happening.
Yeah, and that's, you know, essentially key as far as understanding what that forecasted risk is, or you know, yes, who's predicted from not just a high cost perspective, but from a chronic disease perspective, knowing that oftentimes over time can end up costing more than one isolated event. So,
right.
Another question I have, just to see if I can top this last one. In the captive arena, what do you see are the biggest trends in that space right now?
Yeah, there's several. I mean, I would say one of the big trends that I've seen is I've seen a lot of self-funded groups that are already self-funded, moving into the space to create greater stability in their stop loss. Because frankly, stop loss for those mid-market groups, you know, the 50 to 500, that can be just as volatile as the fully insured world. And so I've seen more and more groups looking to move into that environment. And then I've frankly seen groups that have just, you know, are looking to get into a known risk pool. You know, leverage trend in the stop loss marketplace is what, upper teens right now. Meaning if I'm a group and I run as expected or well, my starting point on a stop loss renewal is going to be, let's call it mid-teens. And if they know that they can exit that environment and enter a pool that's running relatively flat to low single digits, that's very attractive to employers. So that's probably been the biggest trend. But overall, just the growth, because I think one of the things that was one of the difficulties I ran into early on in trying to, you know, talk about captives in the marketplace is it was kind of this unknown thing. And even if the concept made sense, if they looked around and looked down the street and didn't see any other employers doing it, and they'd never heard about it until I walked in their door, they're skeptical, like, this sounds too good to be true. And I think we've kind of started to overcome that barrier, and the growth has really been exponential. It's really kind of snowballed from what I've seen.
Yeah, what I've loved about just getting further into some of the relationships we have with various captives out there, you know, Jason, that's how we met. You know, I think one of the great things that I've seen is these summits or these, I don't know the right word, maybe a conference where all of the users get together, and it's a chance for employers to kind of ask questions to one another, you know, what's working, you know, maybe I had this issue, what did you do to combat that? Can you speak a little bit to just the power you see your clients getting out of these summits that you attend with them annually?
Yeah, I think the annual meetings, annual summits that these captives have, that's where the magic happens, if you will, because number one, I'm old school in this regard, but I always feel like there's a value in being with someone face to face. And so if you can get into a room with the other people that you're sharing risk with and discuss things, I think just as important though, it's getting in the room and proactively discussing ideas with the different partners within the captive. So there's the captive manager, there's the individual employer, there's the broker consultant, there's Springbuck, the data and analytical tool, there's wellness partners, there are pharmacy partners, etc., etc. And it gives us an opportunity not only to talk about ideas that we're already doing, but to explore new ideas and present them to the group and then let the group decide, hey, is this something that we as a group want to implement in the future? And do we see value in this?
Yeah, well put. It's always been great going. I learn a lot from going there, but I always love seeing the collaboration from the different employers represented in the various cells that we support.
I assume, Mike, you only enjoyed going there because of the happy hours. But
no, it's you teaching me.
You wouldn't be wrong, Jason.
Yeah, it's you teaching me how to swing my golf clubs that I rent. So, last question on my end, very important one as well, is Jason, if you had one free day to do anything you wanted, what would you do and why?
Oh, wow. That's a tough question. There's so many things I'd like to do.
Take that, Jen.
Oh, no. It was phenomenal.
No. Well, I've already accomplished one of them, which was doing a podcast with the two of you.
Okay.
You know, I've never been to Alaska, and I love the outdoors. I personally would love to spend a day standing in a river in Alaska catching salmon who are running upstream and seeing bears running around me. I mean, that would be fun. I guess I haven't really thought about this question too deeply, though, to come up with anything more creative than that.
No,
that sounds good to me.
Yeah, that's on my bucket list as well. I've been to Alaska once, but it was in January, and we had 3 hours of sunlight every day. Not a great time to go.
It is on my list to go next year on a mission trip that goes up there, that spends some time with the indigenous groups and tribes up there. So,
oh, that's awesome.
I'm excited. Looking forward to it.
Hopefully that's in the summer months.
Yes,
okay.
It is. Yep.
I had one recommendation.
Mike, you should know, I went to Iceland actually a couple of summers ago, and I was there on June 21st, and I think you know that's summer solstice. Mm-hmm. And so there's a downside to having 24 straight hours of light as well. So I try to find the happy medium, maybe spring or fall, where you kind of get a break from the light as well.
Yeah, it sounds like between the two of us, we could probably find a good time to go right. By not using the bad times. Thanks so much for your time, Jason. Really appreciate you joining us and making the time to jump on the podcast here today.
Thank you for having me. It's been my pleasure, and thank you for being such a great partner to M3.
Oh, absolutely. The quarter zips, the free State Street brats, you can't make this stuff up. It's the best partnership there is. So, well, that's it for today's episode of Healthcare on the Rocks, Employee Benefits with a Twist.
Thanks for listening. And if you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to rate us or leave a review on your favorite podcast platform.
That helps other people find the show and lets us know what you like. You can find more information about our guest, Jason Nordby, and links to resources we discuss on today's program on our website at springbuck.com/podcast. Got the forward slash in there for you, Jen.
Thank you.
Well, thanks, Jason. Cheers.
Thanks, Jason.
Thank you.